Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is Managing Editor James Kleiman to talk about what we learned at the gathering about the Real Estate Commission lawsuits and settlements and what lenders are doing to win on social media. First, I want to say thank you to our podcast sponsor, Vesta, for making this episode possible. James, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, good to be back, Sarah.
Great to have you back. So last week was a whirlwind. We were at the gathering. You and I were on stage. I don't know how many times. We had some
Quite a bit.
amazing speakers, that you got to interview. I got to interview other people, they were on panels or whatever. So it was an amazing time. And I'd like to just kind of wrap up for people who weren't there, or even if they were, some of the high points from your perspective, from a news perspective, because we did have people who broke news there, which was really cool. They broke it from the stage. And then we had a lot of really, I mean, the most, one of our taglines was the most powerful room in housing, but it really felt that way. It was just incredible, some of the people we had.
Yeah, I mean, we had a sold-out conference. It was about 700, mostly C-suite folks in mortgage and real estate and tech. There were some appraisal folk, some guys in title and escrow, and it was really, I think it's a great event for a couple reasons. One, we have an amazing team, and we get a really solid range of different speakers. It's not the same people you hear from every year. It's not the same people who are on what I basically call the conference circuit in mortgage or real estate. And it really does represent the full picture, right? It's so rare that you go to a conference, and I go to a lot of conferences, that you're able to talk to someone who is developing an appraisal tech company, and then 8 seconds later, talk to someone who's running a traditional real estate brokerage in the backwoods of North Dakota, and they're just about to run off for a lunch with someone who runs a correspondent mortgage business from Tampa, Florida. It's really a really interesting congregation of people. It's like, and it's great for me because I have such a deep interest in all of these different components of real estate, all the little, pieces to the puzzle. And so I'm like a kid at camp, like a nice sleepaway camp for a couple of days. And from a news perspective, it's great because I think in this modern era, a lot of people are reticent to meet face to face. It's a lot more difficult for us to travel. We don't have, the budget of a New York Times or a Wall Street Journal where I can just, go around the country and meet everybody where they are. And so often we do rely on meeting people at conferences and typically other conferences, right? Like the MBA or NAR or whatever. And when you're here, you get about 700 really interesting people, and you can meet all of them and go over so many topics, and it's just, you can have spontaneous conversations, and it really gets the creative juices flowing. And you can't do that. You don't have the ability to meet so many people when I'm calling or texting or writing emails, and there are gatekeepers and all sorts of people who want to prevent you from meeting the CEO for whatever reason there is. And that doesn't happen when you're at a conference like this. So I like to tell my team of reporters and editors, you can do 6 months of source development work in about 3 to 4 days here.
It was incredible. I agree with that. And we had so many opportunities to do that. One of the panels that you hosted, we didn't have a ton of panels. We used to have all panels, and now we've really gone
Should be
to like
millions.
really quick hit kind of things, get straight to the point, even with people who are like the CEO of Rocket, the CEO of, these really big companies. But you
Yeah, hey, you run like the biggest mortgage lender and, or you run the biggest real estate company, but you get about 20 minutes. So thanks for coming.
Right. It was amazing. But you did a panel on the real estate commission lawsuits and the settlement. You had James Dwiggins on there. You had Anthony Lamacchia. You had Linda Oh. It was a great panel. And for many people on their instant evaluations, it was their favorite panel.
Oh, was it? Okay. Well,
Yeah,
that's good
no,
to
it
know.
ranked really high. And of course, people were talking to me about it afterwards. So from your perspective, and I know that was last week, but what are some of the things that were said there that really impacted you?
I think the big thing is that the real estate industry and people know this, people have talked about this, they've missed an opportunity to explain the value proposition, not just as the buy side agent, not as just a compromised business model in now a world of uncertainty. I think those things are pretty clear and have been clear since the verdict came in late October. But really that the American public doesn't really know what's going on. They read a story from the Journal, maybe in the opinion page or something in the New York Times, and they don't, the real estate community doesn't feel like it represents what actually happened or how they're positioning themselves, you know, as advocates for the consumer. And so the major takeaway for me at this panel is, one, the consumer has not been well served by these lawsuits, by the settlements, and subsequently by the DOJ getting involved in whatever form they end up getting involved in. We don't know how that's going to manifest at this point. But it is going to make a difference when you see people who are being on the wrong side of the deal, right? You know, they don't have an agent who's representing them or their interests. So dual agency is going to be a problem. We're going to see situations where maybe an FHA buyer or a VA buyer, and that's a particularly difficult one, isn't able to compete on a deal. And you're only going to, I think, see major changes, and this was communicated on the panel, when there are enough people in the American public who get up and show how they've been harmed and that the government has not stepped up to the plate and said, hey, we know these major disruptions are happening. We know there's a lot of uncertainty. We know that this is not going to make home buying more affordable. And here's what we're going to do about it. And it's not a political issue in the sense of an ideological problem, right? Like, so we're going to have minorities, people of color who are going to be, according to the speakers, according to the panelists, in a worse position as home buyers because they won't be able to finance it as well as they could have. They're going to have to potentially pay out of pocket on the buy side for commissions. And then you're also going to have VA buyers who are, I think, traditionally considered to be a little bit more in the Republican right-wing sphere of influence. And they're going to be potentially the victims of, you know, what seller wants to deal with that, right? Even if you could maybe put it through as a sell side concession in some form, right? So you have these two different kind of distinct groups, consumer groups that are potentially going to be in a really bad spot. And the government, bless the government, does not move with all deliberate speed and being able to, you know, kind of maneuver quickly and say, hey, these major events occurred just a couple months ago. We've got this program sorted. We've got the guidelines, the policies, everything figured out so that when the changes do happen and they're expected to happen in mid-July, we're ready. We know how to reconcile with some of these issues. There's almost zero chance, I'd say a 1% chance, maybe that's optimistic, a 0.01% chance that the VA is able to resolve the issue regarding, you know, buyers being able to pay their agent through concessions on a VA loan or pay the commissions rather. And so what happens there? So, you know, I think the message really was from the folks on the panel, you need to start speaking up. You need to get out there. You need to explain what's happening. You can't just idly sit by and wait for things to happen. You can't be reactive. I think you need to be a little more proactive and you need to express what this is actually doing in the industry. And that's and that got a lot of applause. It got, I think, you know, the lights are really bright, so I can't tell, but I think there were people standing and clapping. So certainly there were a lot of folks in the room who felt, yeah, you know what, you're right. We have to do better.
Housing Wire is now accepting nominations for our Women of Influence Award, and I have to be the hype person here. I love this award. We started this program 15 years ago to recognize the outstanding efforts of women in driving the housing economy forward, and it just gets more competitive every year. The winners of this award are fantastic, and I can't wait to read your submissions, so send in your nominations today at housingwire.com/womenofinfluence. I think too, there was a call from the stage, and maybe it was James Dwiggins who said, you know, he hoped that NAR would take, you know, kind of redirect the ad campaign money, talking about who we are and the realtors and all that, and put it full force behind, you know, explaining some of this to consumers, going straight to consumers with maybe not even just like, here's why we're valuable, but like, here are the very real complications that now exist. And what's it going to be? Because, you know, they, you know, many people are members of NAR and want that to be, you know, they want to see that advocacy right now, really fast.
Yeah. Why not spotlight what's actually happening? Right. And there is so much uncertainty. There's so much anxiety. There are a lot of people who, by virtue of these settlements, are going to be in a much different position as a buyer. Right. And it's not like the home prices have gone down. Home prices continue to go up. And now you're also going to be potentially having to pay out of pocket for your agent representation. And so why not do an ad campaign that focuses on that? Or instead of, and this is a subtle tweak, but instead of the who we are, how about a what we do, right? I think there's sort of this narrative out there that the buy side agent just opens a door to a listing that you found on Zillow and says, okay, do you want to make an offer? And if it gets any complicated, they can't really handle it, or they don't want to, or they're just there because they knew that they saw on the MLS that they were going to get their 2.5% or 3% or whatever the number was, and they didn't really add a lot of value to the transaction, and that was that. I do think that that does happen. Absolutely, that does happen in the US, but I don't know about, you know, how many people have great agents, and we've heard from even our own colleagues and people, you know, that are just sort of in our sphere that they've gotten much better deals. They've saved money because they did end up paying for a really great representative on the buy side, and that made all the difference. And so NAR is not to date really, I think, done a lot of that. We also did hear from Kevin Sears, who's the president of NAR, and you know, he was sort of a last minute attendee because he felt it was really important to communicate what the trade group is doing. And this is obviously a room of powerful housing executives. And he said, we are mobilizing a network of advocates, and they're going to be doing, you know, media training. They're going to be doing advocacy locally, probably more than national. And I don't think that's a bad idea, right? It's you know, not that local news consumption is exactly in the best place, but most of the news that you read as a consumer that affects you on a day-to-day basis, or even, you know, if you zoom out one level, it's going to be local news, right? It's what happens at your school district. It's what happens to the, you know, I covered local news for years, and people always complained in this one community about the football field flooding and what to do about it. And that was much bigger news than, you know, the tax levy or the library might have to shut down one day a week or whatever. It was always about the football field. So, you know, but my point being, you know, local issues matter, and it's a way to galvanize interest. And the agents are local, right? Like, the top agents are not selling homes in communities thousands of miles away. They are fixtures in their communities. And so who better than them to explain, hey, like, remember when I bought your house, Brad? Like, or when you bought your house, Brad? Like, here's what I did to help you. I you know, we went on 40 open houses. We toured. I got you an inspector. I got you a contractor to assess whether the cracks in that foundation looked bad or were just, you know, minor issues that could be addressed. We were able to figure out, because if I had great lending partners, how we could get you in a, you know, a better financing situation. And like, that's the value that they can provide. They don't always provide it. And I think when you don't communicate, there is a void, and it gets filled with, you know, I think people's experiences that are negative. And, you know, like, if you look at Yelp and you look at the restaurants, it's the people who loved it or hated it, right? It's never kind of the average experience. And so I think the realtors need to do a better job of communicating what they do and how they do it to the general consumer.
I totally agree. So I was on a home. I recently moved a couple months ago, so I'm still like decorating my house. So I was on an HGTV spree all weekend, and I can tell you that the realtor ads, the NAR ads on there had been updated, and they were not about who we are. They were about what they do. So I don't know when those started. I haven't watched HGTV in a while. So, but I was really happy about that. I thought it was a great thing. It's still a little bit like, you know, we're not directly focusing like, hey, there was this lawsuit. This is what happened. Here's the results. Here's what you should be doing. And maybe that's not the place, but I was happy to see they're doing that. But to your point, you have an army. You have 1.4 million people in the local place. There's no better foot soldiers than that, right? So, you know, it cracks me up when it doesn't crack me up. It bothers me when it's called a cartel, when ours called a cartel, when I'm like, who makes up this cartel? You know, the quotes around cartel. It's like all these local folks who are generally speaking people, you know, trying to do good things in the neighborhood. So I think that there's a long way to go, but it was great to hear from that panel. It was great to hear from Kevin Sears himself. We were so glad that he made the trip last minute to come over and talk directly to the audience.
In terms of cartel, everyone knows the Zetas are terrified of NAR. They will not, you know, that's why they stay in Mexico, right? They're just, they know that, I mean, 1.4 million soldiers with clipboards and lockboxes, you don't want to mess with them. But on a serious note, look, it's the sort of situation where we have a lot of people who think that there are going to be major changes to the industry and a lot of longstanding practices, mostly as it relates to commissions and getting paid and who pays it and how do they pay it. And okay, we can't do it on the MLS, but can we do it as a concession in the notes on the MLS? Okay, maybe we can't do that. Maybe we can have our own websites, or our brokerage would have a website and we could just put on there, you know, hey, buyer's agent gets 2.75%, you know, but generally speaking, there are so many large questions that have not been resolved and we don't know how we're going to shake out. And so you have so many differing opinions and so many different models that some are testing. We heard from mortgage lenders who are looking to hire real estate agents, others who are potentially looking to do dual licensing, where maybe an agent has their, you know, license to be a loan officer, others where their brokerage would have salaried or, you know, some sort of full-time W-2 status, and they can be a lead generation, but they have to be participating in the deal because otherwise it could be a respite issue. Like, we have all these complications. We have so many questions that have really come to the surface, and everyone's just trying to figure out, like, how do we get a little bit ahead of it? Because you can't plan so far ahead that you have the, you know, the strategy, like the definitive, this is how we do it. And so it creates anxiety for everyone in the process because you just don't know. Maybe there's going to be a company that comes out of nowhere and says, we're going to advertise all over TV on HGTV. They're going to be telling Sarah Wheeler, hey, don't get the shiplap. Don't get the barn doors everywhere. Also, I'm going to be your buy-side agent. I'm going to take 1% flat, and they're going to advertise, you know, up and down, you know, the Eastern and Western seaboards. And, you know, they're going to figure out a way to disrupt the traditional brokerage model, right? Like, we don't know. That could happen. And so my general sense was there's a lot of anxiety. And while we are here in this kind of lull as we wait, we need to be better about communicating what we do and how we do it and how we get paid and be radically transparent. I think the industry has been better, but should have been doing this years ago. And whether that's NAR's fault or someone else's, doesn't matter anymore, right? But you have to adapt. And that was really the theme for me in general of the whole conference, is like, everybody has to adapt. No one's safe. No one's comfortable. Like, look at the best, you know, the best known companies out there that are the envy of others in both mortgage and real estate. How many of them have had 3 consecutive quarters where they've made money? A couple, maybe, right? Like, no one's figured it out entirely.
It was really interesting to hear from the stage what they're doing, how they're innovating. Nobody's sitting there going, oh, you know, we're doing okay. Even we both talked to Ben Cohen, I believe. I did a podcast with him. And, you know, I mean, here he is, like, number one, number two in the country as far as a producing a LO, loan officer. And he's busting it. He's out there looking. He's looking for different ways to do things. He's trying to solve problems. You know, if anyone should be on a boat in the Caribbean or whatever, it would be him. And he's like, that's not his attitude at all.
No, and it can't be, right? I mean, the top loan officers get to where they are because they have good systems, right? And they have established, here's how we have a good business practice and what we do. But they can't just rest on their laurels and hope that they just have to go through their CRM and wait on a couple to refi, right? That's not going to happen. Or maybe there are move-up buyers. There are some, but not as many as there used to be. So they need to be going beyond, you know, their borders, so to speak. And they need to be getting new leads. They need to be getting new referral sources. They need to be doing things that they maybe haven't done or didn't do to the extent that they do. And a lot of LOs, I talk to a lot of top LOs, they're creatures of habit. You know, they have, we're going to do a big seminar, a home buying seminar on Monday. And then I'm going to do, you know, realtor coffees on Tuesdays. I'm going to speak at a local association on Wednesday. It was like, a lot of them are very, I think, by the book, like they've developed this system. And when you change how their schedule looks, you know, because you have to, right? You need new referral sources. You need new leads coming in because everything else is down 50% or more, right? So that's how you stay on top. So yeah, I mean, you got to be flexible. You got to change with the environment that you have. And, you know, there's no other way. There's no secret sauce.
Gosh, there were so many great people on stage. It's hard for me. I got to interview Pat Dodd of CoreLogic. That was crazy. I mean, he's like, this is a giant company that has layers of property data that you and I have both seen their discovery center that can kind of freak you out if you look at all the things they know and how they're deploying yeah. those things for our industry. We had, you know, Varun from Rocket. I mean, that was incredible. So it's hard to encapsulate what happened there, but were there other things that, you know, were takeaways for you?
I had a really cool panel with a guy named Greg Scherer. He's been on this podcast before, I believe. I've been on, you know, he's got his own big audience. And we really talked about the power of social media and more than just the power of social media. But if you are an executive, why you have to be out there, why you have to show who you are and what your values are and really the benefits of doing it. And it's not easy. And a lot of people see more risk in being public and talking about some of the challenges than not. And I think that's one of the reasons why we often think that there is a void in leadership in the industry, because you hear from the trade groups, right? You hear from the MBA, you'll hear from CHLA, and there are a couple others out there that are relatively small, but have a voice, that have an audience, that have a mission. But how many big name CEOs get out there and talk about real world problems and the big thorny, challenging stuff that doesn't have an obvious, simple answer, right? There just aren't many of them. And so Greg gets up there, he's a big LinkedIn guy. And he's the managing director at NFM Lending, which is known pretty well in the mortgage space for kind of being on like the edge of lead gen and using content creation and tools to engage with younger audiences where they are, like on TikTok. And I'm sure there are other apps out there that I don't even know about, right? Because I'm getting old and it's not really a focus of mine. So Greg talks about, he's been on LinkedIn. He's got about 32,000-33,000 followers, and he's used the platform to talk about real issues in mortgage that a lot of others don't want to engage with, and how it's benefited him and how it can benefit others if they use it as a platform, but they have to be responsible, right? Like Greg doesn't get up there and cut people down or, you know, pick fights with people, which I think the industry is kind of maybe got a bit of a reputation for, right? So he gave an example where he had a problem with his CRM and he put it all out there and he met with them and, you know, they were very responsive, but it gave him an opportunity to look at competitors, to look at others who might offer him and his company a better experience, a better service for his needs, right? And maybe that wouldn't be true for somebody else at a different kind of lender, or maybe, you know, whatever. But the important thing is this kicked off a huge conversation just about the relationship between the vendors in the space. And there are so many of them, right? There are probably thousands. that you hear about here and there, some that you hear about all the time, and that relationship between the vendor and the lender, and how many broken processes or bad communication can occur, and people come up with horror stories and frustrations, and it's like, obviously there was something that's been here all along. There's been a frustration that people on the lending side have had for quite some time. And I would imagine that you probably conversely have the same issues of a different stripe on the tech, you know, vendor solutions side, right? But this kicks off like hundreds of comments. It got like 42,000 impressions or hundreds of thousands of page views. It went viral, essentially. And he was able to use that to get a new vendor for this service. So he ended up dropping the prior vendor and went with Total Expert and announced it on stage. You know, and he also talked about, again, this sort of idea of conflict in the channel that maybe benefits some, but isn't an overall benefit in his view for everyone. And so how long have we heard the phrase brokers are better? It's been years, right? I've heard it since I started here in 2020. I don't know, you know, I'm sure there are some brokers who are better than other retail LOs. I'm sure there are some retail LOs who are much better than other brokers, right? I don't think that anyone can make a definitive statement, maybe beyond like a Matt Ishbia, right? Who certainly has his own views on the matter, but the brokers are better thing he found divisive and said, we should retire it. I think AIM should drop it. I think the lenders should stop saying that the brokers are better and that this is just, you know, divisive and really not a productive framing of how we work as an industry. And so he brought out a bunch of t-shirts. They said, hashtag all of us. And about like 40, 50 people, you know, came up and got the t-shirts you know, they were pretty excited about it. And so again, I think being out there and being able to speak your truth and to use your voice to advocate for what you think is right and what you think is best for the industry has really paid off for Greg. And you don't see a ton of it. There are a couple pretty notable people on LinkedIn and other platforms that do kind of speak to some of the issues, but I think not as many as one would maybe hope given the magnitude of issues, right? Like we have, how much does it cost to originate a loan these days? Like, what is it? $12,500.
13, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, right? And the average IMB is bringing in 10.5 for each of those loans. So like we obviously have a very fundamental problem. And Rich Wydell, who's the head of Princeton Mortgage, also had a great presentation, a really awesome presentation about how to rethink sort of this mortgage origination process and to focus on the right metrics, which is not just growing at scale for the sake of growing at scale, but really kind of rethinking some of these conventional wisdom nuggets that often seem to drive the hiring practices and the business practices in general of the industry. So I thought that was an excellent presentation, and hopefully Rich and I could do something separate on it because, you know, I want to make sure that people get a chance to see it. I thought it was really, really thoughtful.
It was really thoughtful. Now, both of those, the Greg Scher session and that one with Rich, were so interesting. I think the thing with Greg Scher too is like, I mean, he really is advocating for something far beyond like post every day, post it. You know, it's definitely like it's the quality and the topics and the way that he's doing it. You know, those are some deep waters to wade into. Some people don't want to do that because it is. You know, you're going to take some flack and you've got to be able to figure out how to respond to that, how not to, you know, damage your brand in the process. It's not an easy thing to do.
No, and it's not without risk. And Greg was, I think, pretty open about the fact that he's sort of in what he called his legacy building stage of the career. You know, he's in his 50s and he's not going to be doing mortgage lending when he's 75 or 80 years old. And I know there are some people who do that, but he wants, to leave a better industry than the one he entered. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit for that. I think that's really cool.
I think, you know, if I had to say something, I feel like we heard from quite a few people on stage who were like, they're putting it out there. They're the actions they're taking now, the advocacy they're doing, it really is bigger than just them. They're not just like, I'm doing my business. I need to make all this money. And, of course that is why we're all, you know, I mean, that's not a bad thing. And they're, you know, employing people. But I do think there were a lot of people who were like, let's look out for the overall health of this industry, whether it's real estate or mortgage, you know, it's really housing. And they were willing to put their money where their mouth was.
Yeah. And I think there was also, by the same kind of message, maybe this is just like one step further, in that we need to be more focused on quality and service for the consumer. And there are a lot of folks acknowledged on the real estate side that there are way too many agents who just don't know how to do the job that they are entrusted when they're working with a consumer to do, right? And you know, a lot of LOs have already washed out, well over 100,000 since the peak in 2021. But you have a lot of folks who just aren't able to provide that kind of service, and you need better quality control. You need a better, I think, not even perspective, but like you need a better plan, and you need to make sure that your staff is really well trained, that they're versatile, that they know how to do it, and that you're always thinking about serving the consumer. I think ultimately, because yes, it's a cyclical business, rates are a major thing that you always have to keep in mind. You know, not that you live and die by rates, right? I don't mean to suggest that, but if you provide a great experience for the borrower, for your client, you have a much better shot of being here. And your motto isn't survive till 25, right? Which seems almost like not self-defeatist, but it's sort of like if that's your message, I think you're maybe, I think it's easy to make the wrong decision for the consumer if you're more focused on survival than on service and quality and being good at your job and knowing that these things boomerang back and that there will be good years, there will be tough years like this, right? But if you're focused always on the consumer experience and you're right by the consumer every time, you're, I think, just much more likely to make it work. Now, I say this and who knows, there could be four or five companies just like that that are going out of business today. So, you know, try not to be cynical here, Sarah.
I love it when we're not cynical. I always want to look at the positive because I don't think it does, you know, let's look at, you know, I mean, we're news people. We always know, you know, the bad news that's going on. We always know that. But then we also know, like, you know, what can be, what and what people are doing. And I think this conference was all about what people are doing, the proactivity, the real, you know, taking action and not like survive till 25. So thanks for being on, James. And thanks for doing such a great job. You were great on stage. You were great in the interviews you did and the coverage that your newsroom did. So just a win all the way around. So thanks for being on to talk about it.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.